Hi, welcome to Things in Jars, a podcast about oddities, curiosities, and all the weird and wonderful stuff that dwells in museum stores. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Poppy, and we're both curators, here to take you behind the scenes of the museum with us as we explore cool artifacts and answer your questions about what it's really like to work in a museum.
Welcome back to another episode of Things in Jars. And today we are going to be talking about interviews for heritage jobs. This is mostly aimed at people who are in their early careers or who are looking to get started in their career, but could also be relevant for people a little bit further on in their career as well. Poppy and I both have a bit of experience in both applying for jobs like this and being successful and sometimes not successful. And we also both have a fair bit of experience in actually interviewing candidates. So we wanted to give you our best tips and an insight into what makes a good interview for us and hopefully help you succeed in whatever job you are applying for. But before we go on any further, we just want to say at the time of recording this, things are actually looking really difficult for the heritage sector right now because of the effects of the pandemic. We know a lot of people out there are really worried for their jobs and will be worried for their livelihoods, and that a lot of people are really struggling with the situation as it is right now. We also know that there are a lot of people out there who are looking to gain entry into the sector, a lot of emerging people who want to kind of get their first foot on the ladder, and things will be really difficult for you as well.
We very much count ourselves in the number of people that are kind of a bit stressed out about the state of things. But yes, this is very, very sad times for the heritage sector and all that work in it.
But also, having said that, there's a lot of solidarity out there, and I think and I hope that the heritage sector in general will be able to sort of pull through this really troubled time. We've planned to record this episode for a while anyway, and while I don't think that we can claim to have kind of all of the magical answers that will absolutely guarantee you to be successful in any interview you go for, we do have a little bit of experience, as I mentioned before. We've also done a similar episode about our tips for good applications as well, so be sure to go and check that out.
And this week's item spotlight has been chosen by Melissa. So what have you got for us this week?
I'm going to tell you about a fortune-telling doll from the Bradford Museum's collection.
Brilliant. Amazing. What more could you want?
Yeah, she's a great one. Before we get into the rest of the episode, we'd just like to clarify that opinions expressed in this show are our own, and Things in Jars is not affiliated with the museum in which we work, although we will be referring a lot to its wonderful collection. Okay, so you've been invited to an interview at a museum. And firstly, congratulations for getting this far if you do actually have an interview coming up. The general rule is that you wouldn't be invited for an interview unless your potential employers think that having read your application form that you could actually do the job. So big well done to you if you have an interview looming on the horizon. So you've written a great application that's got you this far. What can you be doing right now to prepare and make sure that you boss that interview?
No one enjoys an interview.
Yes.
It's okay to be nervous.
Yes, it's very true. And a lot of kind interview panels, and in fact, not just kind interview panels, just normal people sitting on interview panels will appreciate that you will be feeling nervous. You're likely to have travelled a long way to get there. You'll probably be tired after a sleepless night. The journey might have stressed you out. You're in unfamiliar surroundings. You're in a really weird, alien situation. Interviews are awful, awful things.
Yeah.
But alas, it is the way that the world works right now. And you will often encounter interviewers who understand and hopefully will try and put you at ease a little bit. At least that's what we try and always do, because we really empathize with people who come to talk to us.
I feel stress nerves for them. I get sympathy pains.
Yeah, same. You know, it's an interviewer's job to put you at ease. And if they don't do that, or they make things deliberately difficult, that's not good. That's not nice. And you might think, well, do I want to work with people who are like this?
Yeah, and listen to those red flags. If you see any at interview stage, you should really take heed of them and don't just kind of blindly think, oh, it's fine. You know, it was an interview. It's odd. It is odd to an extent, but these can be very telling things.
They can.
So if they make you feel bad, or it seems like they're trying to catch you out, or, you know, you just get a bad vibe, if they offer you the job, you might want to seriously think about whether it's right for you and whether you want to be in a situation like that every single day.
Yes, interviews are two-way systems. One way is for the organisation to get to know you and see if you would be suitable, but also for you to see whether you think you would be suitable to work there as well. It's a two-way thing. So
yeah,
take a little bit of pressure off yourself.
They'd be lucky to have you.
So I think my number one tip to anyone in any interview setting for any job, but I think, you know, particularly for the heritage organisation, and I'm sure Poppy will have this on her list of tips as well, because it's one that you hear a lot, but there's a reason for it. And this is, when you go for an interview, just be yourself.
Yeah.
I've learned this over the years, and I think what I mean by that is, obviously when you go to an interview, you are going to be putting on your sort of professional self, your work self. Like, we all have a public facing side. You know, I'm not talking about sort of revealing your innermost deep truth to the interview panel and giving them your life story and what have you. That's not what I mean. What I mean is just be your authentic self, because it's very important for the interviewers to see who you are and whether you would be a good fit for the team that you would be working in, or if you would be working with the interviewer directly, which you might be, as it's likely that they would be on the interview panel because you would be working for them or with them. They want to see if you're the sort of person that they can get along with. And human beings are all very different, and sometimes we just don't get along with each other, not because there's anything wrong with anyone, it's just certain people aren't compatible. And it's really important for an interviewer, therefore, to see you for who you are. And it's also important for you to be yourself, because you don't have to pretend you're something you're not. If you go into an interview and you are yourself, and if you are successful and get the job, then you'll have done yourself proud and you'll be heading to work with people that like you for who you are. I mean, obviously you can't give people a full glimpse of yourself in an interview because it's a short space of time. But you'll have done yourself proud, you'll be going to work with a team who think they will get along with you well and who you think you would be a good fit with too. And if you're not successful, you can hold your head high and say, I did my best and I was myself and this one just wasn't for me. And it sounds a bit cheesy, I know, saying like, be true to yourself, but it does help, because you've only got yourself. And as long as you've done your best, if it doesn't work out, then it's not the right place for you. And I know it's easier said than done to do that as well, because we all struggle with that self-esteem. That imposter syndrome runs riot. We all know it. I know it. And in a competitive world as well, it's even harder, especially with things as they are right now. And the pressure to be the best and to be perfect is sky high. And it's really hard not to think like that when you're going in for an interview, especially when it's a job that you really want, which chances are, if you're going for a job in a heritage sector, you're really going to want it. But if you're on your own side and you're true to yourself, it's much easier to not beat yourself up when things don't go your way and to pick yourself up and try again after.
Yep. All truth.
Woo, that was a speech.
Is the truth.
That was a counselling session.
Very necessary though. Yeah, you did right. And there's so much that comes under that umbrella of being yourself, as in, don't be afraid to show some personality. One of my tips was for kind of how you present at the interview. So I don't know if I'm jumping the gun a little bit by bringing this in here, but when choosing what to wear, for example, don't be afraid to wear something that's not business attire. You know, if you want to wear some colour, go for colour. If you want to wear something that feels a bit more you because you have a very specific style, I mean, go for that within reason. You still got to look smart, but, you know, it's so much easier for us as interviewers to pick people that show a little bit of personality because then we kind of know what we're getting. We don't want to work with a robot, so it makes you more memorable, for starters, which is a good thing, especially if you're interviewing a lot of people in one day. The ones that you can remember are going to stick out for good reason, unless they stick out for a really, really bad reason, but that doesn't usually happen. So yeah, I mean, for yourself, certainly my experience of heritage is that it's a bit more personable. It's a bit more, you know, your personality does count for a lot. Your skills and experience are massively important, but also they're not everything, you know? Your personality is kind of the not on paper factor, and it's all the things that you will bring to the job that other candidates won't have in the same measure. So it's what's going to set you apart, and that can be a really good thing. So you want to absolutely embrace that and let them see it. Be yourself.
So are we clear on being yourself?
Loud and clear.
Loud and clear. Good.
It's the best way. So top tip number two.
Top tip number two is, whatever you do, I can almost 100% guarantee that in any job interview you go for, you will be asked to say a bit about what the organisation does. I would really recommend just getting on the website, getting on their social media channels, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube as well, and just spend some time soaking in everything that they do, because it'll just give you such a good edge if in the interview you can kind of bring up things that you've seen that they're doing online, like events or programs or just things about the organization that you find interesting or valuable, or that, you know, if it's particular to your job that you would like to be involved with. It'll just help. It'll just help, and it's such an easy thing to be able to do. And most often it's one of the first questions you might get asked, so, you know, you don't want to fall at the first hurdle. You want to get off to a good start, and that is a way that you can guarantee that you will get off to a good start.
Yeah, do your prep, every aspect of prep. So research your place, also do some interview questions. It's kind of amazing the number of people that don't prep for interviews. I spend a long, long time doing practice questions and things if I go, because I get so nervous that I get like panic blind. So yeah, it's just so worth it to have someone you are comfortable with maybe firing some interview questions at you, and the more you do them, the better you get. There is definitely, it pays off. There's a way to kind of answer interview questions and to be able to sell yourself in a situation like that, and it only comes with practice. So don't just think I'm going to go in and I'm going to be in the moment and I'll wing it, because I really don't think that's a tactic that will stand you in good stead. At least it's certainly not for me. I don't know about you.
No, not for me either. And while you're preparing interview questions, try and think about some that might catch you off guard, or questions that you might not necessarily expect. So for example, one that you are sometimes asked is, can you tell me about your weaknesses? So what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses? It's a really good thing, because I've been asked before, like, what are your weaknesses in an interview? And I hadn't expected that at all. And I was a bit like, because everything you think of sounds bad. Like, you don't want to admit to any faults. But actually, if you can pick something, work-related, of course, like, you know, you don't need to get too personal with it.
Pick something and then genuinely outline how you are working on it, so that whatever it is, the interviewer can see that you're aware and you're on track to improve.
Even if you don't get asked it, it's good to be aware of that. Just, not even just for interviews, but for a CPD, from a CPD angle, it's just good to know in general, because then you can always improve and it won't be a weakness forever.
Why do you think they ask questions like, what are your weaknesses? Like, what are they trying to get out of you? Because they quite often ask, like, what are your strengths and weaknesses?
I think it is to see how self-aware you are, and to see if you are willing to identify, if you're willing to look in the mirror, identify a weakness and work on it. I honestly think that that's what they want. They want someone who is able to acknowledge that they're not a perfect human being, and but that they can work on it.
Yeah, true.
Imagine how it would sound if I said to you, what?
Oh, I don't have any, I'm perfect.
Yeah, what weaknesses do you have? And you're like, oh, none. I'd be like, lol. Okay then. Bye. Think of it like
too many to count.
It's not a negative.
Again, it comes back to personality, doesn't it? Like, they want to see more of you as a person and not a business robot that literally is perfect and does everything well all the time, because no one does that. We all have weaknesses. I have a ton, but we won't go into that on this podcast.
I also have a ton, but yeah, let's save that for another time.
Interview tip number three.
My tip number three is to really listen to the question that you are being asked and take your time to answer it. So what I mean by that is, don't be afraid to just pause for a moment. I'm not talking like 5 minutes, but don't be afraid of a little moment of silence where you just quickly go through in your head what the question is, what you are being asked, so that you can go for a kind of considered answer. In my experience, when I have been asked a question or when I ask a question, the interviewer is looking for a simple, considered answer. They're not looking for you to come up with a Shakespearean play. They're not looking for you to kind of know every last little thing. They just want to get a sense that you are a balanced person who has considered what you are being asked. And I know, again, that's really difficult in an interview setting because you're going to be nervous and you're brain might blank and you've got the fear. And if you don't quite understand what's going on, just take a deep breath, give yourself a second to think about it. And if you really don't get it, just ask, just say, oh, what can you just tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that? Or could you just explain that a little bit more for me? Or are you kind of thinking about this? You know, the interviewer is not going to go, no, answer the question. They'll go, oh, I was actually wanting you to talk about blah, blah, blah. And then you'll be like, oh, okay. And then carry on. And that's not a bad thing. Honestly, that happens all the time. And I would much rather continue the conversation with you understanding it and giving me an honest answer than you trying to make up stuff because you haven't understood what I'm asking and you getting panicked and stressed. Honestly, just it's not a bad thing. In human conversations, in everyday conversations, I don't understand things all the time.
So,
like with Poppy, I'm often like, what do you mean? And obviously you wouldn't say it like that in an interview. You'd be like, oh, can you rephrase the question? But
would you mind?
Yeah, just ask, honestly.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that if you don't understand and you try and like go down a route that's not the right one, that's going to count against you a lot more if you try and blag it and you're wrong and you haven't been able to talk about your amazing experience that you've got because you didn't understand the question. It might be helpful to break down what interviewers are kind of looking for into three categories. So we need to see that you understand the role. That's the main thing. You need to show us that you know quite clearly what it is we are asking you to do. Secondly, you need to be qualified for the role. So you've understood the role. This is how you are going to be a good fit for us. As in, you have X experience, you've been volunteering for X many years, you are good at X, Y, Z. That means that you will be able to do the job. The third thing is like all of the other bits, your personality, your interests, whether you are a good person for our organisation. So doing your research, as Melissa said, looking up our social media and being able to tell us what we do, that's all part of the first category, understanding the role, where you'd be coming to work. And everything else kind of falls into the other pieces. So if you don't understand the question, just ask. Make sure you're hitting all three, because otherwise you're not going to be able to A, understand the role, and B, show us how you fit it. You're just going to kind of waffle, and no one, you know, I'm a terrible one for waffling, but like, you just know you can't get back after that. Like, you just feel like you've ruined your chances if you start off on a bad foot. So yes, just ask. We've kind of covered like the basic traineeship, early career stuff. And this is still going to be relevant for that, hopefully. But we also wanted to spend a bit of time in this episode talking about interviews for the next level up. So maybe assistant curators or curatorial assistants, maybe slightly more than early career, more like, you know, early to mid. And these interviews, it was a surprise to me when I started going for them at the end of my traineeship year, but quite often they are much longer interviews and they include some sort of curatorial task or presentation that you have to give as well as doing the question and answer part of the interview. So these could be anything at all. It really depends on the job that you're going for, but if you're going for documentation, they might ask you to catalogue something right there in the room. If you're going for, I remember in my interview for my current job, I had to do a handling task, and also it was handling and documentation, so I had to pick something up and then make out as though I was like doing a catalogue record for it, so I had to read out what information I would put into where. You might be asked to identify something, which I think is what you had.
For the job I'm in now, I had a handling, object handling task, and then a presentation.
Oh, okay. Wow. So we thought maybe, you know, we should spend some time on these because they can be pretty daunting. I mean, even if you're an object handler and you do it every single day in your role, suddenly coming into someone else's museum and having to do it in front of a panel of people makes you second guess absolutely everything. So here are my top tips for handling. The most valuable piece of information I've ever been given is to bring your own gloves, as in, you just never know. You should be so prepared that you should turn up at the interview with your own gloves. Because what if that's, I mean, we have said that they don't tend to try and trick you out, and I really, really don't think this would happen. But if it's something that you would normally wear gloves for at your museum and there aren't gloves on the table, just be super prepared. Whack out your own gloves. But on that vein, I would kind of always recommend before you pick anything up, the prep before you touch anything is going to count for a lot. They're going to be watching what kind of actions you take before you touch the thing, because if you work in museums, you'll know that you should never just go and pick something up. You have to have planned why you're picking it up. Are you prepared to pick it up? Have you got like the right PPE on if you need anything? Where are you going to put it? Is your route clear? All these things. So do all of that. Go through all of that in your head. Is it something that you would wear gloves for at your museum? Things like paper can be a bit tricky because we personally don't wear gloves, so we just use clean hands, but other museums I have seen wear gloves for handling paper and manuscripts. So you might want to ask them. At my museum, we don't wear gloves for handling paper, but I recognise that maybe you would want me to. Do you have a preference?
Ooh, good tip.
They might refuse to answer. If they refuse to answer, that's on them, and just be like, okay, well, using my professional experience, I'm going to go and wash my hands and then I'm going to pick that up. You might want to make sure that you've got no rings or jewellery on your hands. And a big one, don't wear any nail polish. Never go to a curatorial interview with nail polish on. Unless you've brought your gloves, then you can maybe get away with it. But clean hands is always something I look for when I interview because it's important. It's the details that are going to set you apart. You need to show that you could be ready to do anything. And, you know, short nails, no acrylics, no things that could scrape objects, no nail polish that could dye objects. All of these things are just, they show that you're in the right headspace for collections and handling. In terms of the practical, you can always ask them questions as you're doing it, but you need to show that you're confident. So I would always lead with, in my experience, this is how I would do it. If you have an objection, please say now. Otherwise, I'm going to pick up the subject. Things like that, you know, just involve them, show respect for them, but also show that you know what you're doing. And you can be reassured in that they will not be giving you their most precious thing ever to hold. Like, it's probably going to be some kid's thing or something from the replica collection. It's very unlikely to be something actually valuable, so they would not put you in a position where you could do some damage. So I really enjoy the practical bits. It's quite nice to have a little break from the questions. So, and it's stuff that you know. I mean, if you've been doing it, take confidence. Really, I know you can go a bit, like you can get mental blocks in those situations because it's really scary, but just do what you know. Hopefully they'll be putting you at ease and they won't make it too awkward. If they're really nice, they might chat to you while you're doing it or offer you feedback. It'll be fine. You know your stuff.
For jobs like this, I think it's fair to assume that you probably will be asked to do something like this. And I think the clue is in the job description. it can be quite easy to kind of guess roughly what the task might involve, because it's always going to be related specifically to the job. For other things, like when I've had to do a presentation, I think that's quite a standard thing, and it gives them the chance to kind of watch you and see how well you can prepare for things, because obviously for things like that you should be given advance notice. It's really your chance to polish it and make it shine, because you can walk into that interview and you can be nervous about the other things, but if you can walk in confident that your presentation is good and you've planned it and practiced it, then you know that you've got that under your belt and that you're going to impress them with that. And like Poppy was saying before about practicing like questions with people, practice a presentation with someone as well. Shall we do a bit of like a summarizing takeaway of all of that? Because that was a lot of information. So, okay. So if you are looking for your first job in the heritage sector and you're not quite sure what to expect from an interview, our top tips to you would be to be yourself, to research the place that you are going to work for, to listen to the question, take some time to consider it, and if you're not sure, just ask.
To prepare fully, do the homework beforehand, make sure that you are prepared in yourself, so you've got a killer outfit, smart yet reflects who you are, you're prepared for any tasks you might be required to do, so you've got all your stuff for your presentation, you've got your gloves, bring your gloves. I mean, even if it goes well, you always come out feeling like it didn't, so don't try and assume you know how it went. Like, just try and put it out of your mind. And if they haven't told you in the interview, ask when you can expect to hear and whether it'll be a phone call or an email. And just try to, be kind to yourself. It's never easy. There are always things that you could do better. You will definitely come out of that room and be like, oh no, I should have said that and I didn't say it. That's normal. But hopefully you conveyed enough of you to convince them that you are the best person for the job. And there's always a next time. If not, I mean, you'll do a million interviews in your life. Every interview is a good experience. Even if you don't get the job, it's a step closer to getting the next job that you will get. You're doing great. We all hate interviews, but you got it. You got it. And you'll get to where you need to be. It's time for this week's item spotlight. And I, for one, cannot wait to hear about this fortune-telling doll.
Yeah, I'm excited to tell you.
It's like if Gretchen had magical powers.
I know, I liked returning to the creepy doll world. We all love the creepy doll world. So, I'm going to tell you about a fortune-telling doll. She can be found at Bolling Hall, which if you listen to our After Dark series, you'll know is quite a spooky place. These dolls are also known as Grudnertl dolls. Sorry, the pronunciation probably was very bad of that. It's a German term. Or Dutch dolls. And these dolls were typically made of peg or wood. So they're quite simple in design. And they were very popular in the Victorian era. And I have seen a couple of versions of this type of fortune-telling doll. But the one in Bradford Museum's collection caught my eye because they posted about it on Twitter. And she's quite small, and she has one of those little creepy doll faces.
Great.
That we all know.
Great.
And love. And her hands are like little paddles with no fingers, and they're quite sharp. And she's very small. She's wearing a brown hooded cloak and a dress. So how does she tell your fortune, you may ask? Well, if you lift up her skirt, instead of legs, you find a big bundle of folded papers that have been sewn into the skirt. And each one, if you unfold it, contains a prediction for the future.
Whoa!
And apparently how this would work, I've read a couple of different variations on this, but one way to do it is that you would spin the upper half of the doll sort of around. And when she stops, the pointer, which would be the doll's left hand, would indicate which leaf was to be picked and unfolded and read. Or another method is that you would spin the doll around and the fortunes would sort of fan out. in a circle, and then you could pick one at random.
That's cool. That sounds fun.
Bradford Museum's actually posted a film of their curator very carefully unfolding one of the fortunes of this doll on Twitter, and they put some really excellent creepy doll music in the background while they were doing Brilliant. It. So it was fun to watch. And they unfolded one of the fortunes, but I could not figure out for the life of me what it said, because the writing was very difficult to decipher. But the V&A have two fortune-telling dolls as well. And theirs say that the fortunes are all about love, which they say suggests that the dolls were designed for young girls and unmarried ladies and not necessarily children. And they have a doll whose fortunes are all written in French. So they translated one and gave an example as, "Remember, life is an express train and you only get 10 minutes at the buffet of love."
Whoa!
Those are words to live by, everyone. Buffet. You only get 10 minutes at the buffet of love.
The buffet always be too short.
Only 10 minutes on the express train of life. And apparently that doll was made between 1845 and 55.
Express trains are a new thing.
Not sure what's going on about that, whether that's a more modern fortune or not so much, but yeah. So remember that, everyone. So there we have it. A fortune-telling doll with much wisdom to impart.
Oh, man. That's one of my favourites. Yeah, I think that's brilliant.
That brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it, and we also hope that you found this to be helpful if you are putting yourself out there in the world of job applications and interviews. It's a scary world, it's a horrible world, but we're behind you.
And let us know how it goes. If you listen to this before an interview and you're successful, like, tell us, we'd love to know. We want to cheer for you.
If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to hear more of our tips and advice for interviews, we did actually record a much longer version of this episode, which we've made available on our Patreon page. You can find us at www.patreon.com/thingsinjarspodcast. And the theme for next week's episode will be clothing, so make sure you come back and listen to that one. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at thingsinjarspod and on Instagram at thingsinjarspodcast. And you can also check out our merch on www.thingsinjars.threadless.com. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Poppy.
Thank you very much for listening.
And we'll see you next week.